What's up, heretics? Welcome to the Religion of Speed podcast, an automotive news, entertainment, and quote-unquote educational podcast about grassroots racing and car culture, where we give you ways to get out and have fun with cars. I am Matt Overstreet.
And I am Chris Huffman.
And we have been talking for an hour and a half, as usual, about all sorts of things.
That aren't cars. Yeah.
So we have ideas now for a Marvel podcast.
Yep.
A Pokemon podcast. That was a while back.
Yep. And a first-person shooter video game podcast.
That would be more you, I think, than me, unless we're talking old-school first-person shooters.
I'm way down. Anything made by id, we can talk about that all day long.
We can talk about GoldenEye.
Yeah, let's do it.
For a while, and how actually terrible that game is if you go back to it.
The gameplay is remarkably archaic.
It's so bad.
For how popular that game was.
This is not the first-person shooter podcast, so before we get down that tangent too far. Oh, man. So last weekend, Huffman, friend of the show, Hamza Petrikovic, and I all went to Pikes Peak hill climb.
That was a blast.
Right? That was such a good time.
It's been on my bucket list to go to Pikes Peak for a long time, and it didn't disappoint.
No. No, it's... I've heard it called, old school racing.
Yeah.
Because it's just... The only people there... Like, it's not anything but racing.
Yeah.
You know, it's not trying to be... Even a NASCAR event is like, hey, this is racing, but we're going to do some sideshow stuff for the family.
Right.
We got a Ferris wheel out back. Yeah. You know, this is just like you drove to a mountain in the middle of nowhere, pretty much.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah, it's just outside Colorado Springs, but
it really feels nowhere. Like the middle of nowhere.
It really does. And the only people there are race car drivers, crew, race fans, some of the most hardcore race fans, I think, in America.
Yeah, people willing to stand in the middle of a racetrack to get a good photo.
Right. And in this case, a few bears.
Yeah, there were bears.
Yeah, race bears.
That's so awesome, race bears. It was great. Like, we were walking around, you know, eating our pit food.
Right.
Talking to engineers. And you bump into a park ranger and says, hey, stay back. There's a bear in the tree in front of you.
What?
And you look up and there's a bear.
Yeah.
And it is surrounded by tents and cars. And I guess they must, honestly, if I were a bear, I'd be like, okay, there's going to be a lot of food here.
Right.
I'm just going to wander in and set up camp. When everybody leaves, we're going to get something to eat.
I think that's what brought them in, is just somebody probably left some food out. They smelled it. They wandered in and then got spooked in the morning and ran up a tree.
Yeah.
And then they were stuck there the entire time.
There was caution tape. Like, what's this here for? Oh, there's a bear.
Yeah. Because I was kind of curious what they were going to do about that. This is now a bear cast. Because, like, there were people everywhere. So, even if they came down, you couldn't just let them leave.
Yeah.
Because, okay, they just wander down to the parking area now and are mauling people in the parking lot.
Right. Like, the best case scenario, they could walk off into the woods. But I don't know which way the bears... I mean, they have a den somewhere, but I don't know where it is.
Right.
Like, it could be where everyone has their cars parked right now.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like, and there were cars parked, for miles? On the side of this road down the mountain.
Oh, yeah. Now, that does make me a little more concerned because there's been a couple of years in the past that we've went and camped up at the halfway picnic grounds
right.
The night before so we can watch the race from that spectator area. And I always thought to myself, there's too many people here. Bears aren't going to come around.
Right.
Apparently, that was wrong.
They were in the most crowded area they could have been in.
Right? And yeah. You know there was people up all night working on those cars,
right.
Making noise and shit.
Yeah.
And so I'm just like, great. So right. Now, this is why next time when I go camping, I'm bringing a U-Haul van and I'm staying in that.
You want some armor around you.
Because that's metal. The people in the tents have more things to be worried about.
Yeah. I mean, they say the fire's enough to scare off a bear, but apparently impact guns aren't enough to scare right? off a bear.
I guess not. So I want to talk about the results of Pikes Peak a little bit.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of drivers that are pretty well known. I do want to start with Tommy Boyle, friend of the show.
Yeah.
I haven't talked to Tommy in quite a while because he's been off doing all sorts of stuff and hasn't been at Track Attack doing anything. I think him and his dad kind of distanced themselves from PPIR a little bit.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I think just they went from... Like doing the thing, being in charge, and you know,
yeah.
I know Tommy's doing a bunch of legit racing, so I think they're just like, right. Well, let's focus on this.
Takes up a lot of time,
it does. So, Tommy was driving a 67 Camaro, which was just awesome.
With yes,
the biggest intake pipe to a turbo I have ever seen in my life.
That was the biggest turbo I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I've never seen, like, and you had to point it out to me because they had to hide it in the fender.
It was actually pretty well hidden for the size of this thing. This thing had to have been, what, like a foot in diameter?
Yeah. Yeah. From end to end, like the outside of the housing. Yeah. This was a massive turbo.
Yeah.
You could fly with it.
I've only seen one turbo that was bigger, but I haven't seen an intake pipe that was bigger because this turbo just was like, it was on a drag S10 when they did, what is that show on Discovery Channel with all the street racer guys?
Oh, as like Street Outlaws?
Yeah, Street Outlaws.
Yeah.
They brought all their stuff to Bandimere. And like one guy had an S10 pickup with a turbo on it that was probably a foot and a half in diameter. This thing was just, it was insanity. This truck also made like 2,000 horsepower or something. So,
holy crap. Now that's a drag truck. Absolutely. Right. I don't know of another application you could use that much power for. Maybe drifting.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
But this was on a, hill climb Camaro.
Yeah.
It had been like a 5-inch intake pipe. It was just ridiculous.
I don't even know where you find tubing that big for charged air.
Hamza was joking it's air ducting out of a house.
It kind of looked like it.
It could have been. Yeah.
It's like, where did you get that?
Right. Yeah. In this Camaro, though, he managed a 12th place finish overall.
That's really impressive, especially considering the competition.
Yeah.
There were some, manufacturer teams came out.
Right, yeah. I mean, there were so many Porsches there.
Yeah. Yeah, Porsche fielded a team. Acura fielded a team. We got to see some really cool new NSXs.
Yeah.
Really just the variety of cars that showed up. And then the times that these cars were running, it's not like you could pick, when you're in the pits, you really couldn't pick who was going to do really well.
Right.
I mean, Reese Millen came in, what, second or third place?
Fourth place.
Fourth place in a Bentley Continental.
Yep, and he would have done a lot better than that. He would have been second for sure, but I guess they developed a boost leak or something, or the boost was dropping off when they got towards the top. So they started slowing down a lot.
Wow, and he still came in fourth.
That was in the time attack class, and he was beating Romain Dumas in the 911 GT2 RS. Dumas is the guy who ran the course in the Volkswagen IDR.
Oh, the gentleman who holds the record.
Yes. So Dumas knows this track.
Yeah.
I'm sure driving this 911 was like a freaking cakewalk for him compared to that Volkswagen.
Yeah, probably.
It's
a shame no one could go for a record run this year.
Yeah, so they did only run 3/4 course because unfortunately it was snowing a lot at the top of the track. Normally, even if they get a little bit of snow, they'll just clear it out or, the sun will melt it and they're not too worried, but I guess they said it was possible to get a foot at the peak. I don't know if they ever got that much snow, though.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah, I'm just glad that they were able to at least call it early enough so that we didn't have half the field with DNFs.
Yes.
Because they couldn't finish when the weather got worse.
Yeah, so the way they do it is if they are running full track, if they plan on running full track anyways, and let's say 10 cars get through and then some major storm rolls through and they can only run to, Glen Cove or something like that, run 2/3 of the way up, all the other drivers get to run, but their runs don't count. They're very much as exhibition runs at that point.
Yeah, it's just a DNF, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, which that would be really disappointing.
Yeah. It's disappointing enough to go there and not complete a run, get a DNF in general, but then to actually do the run and get a DNF would be, I'd almost just pack up my bags and go home.
Yeah, to be told that was the best you could get is a DNF.
Right.
It's like, well, I can leave and get a DNF.
Right, and not have to risk myself or my car, and I'll come back next year and try again.
Yeah.
Speaking of people who, unfortunately, he didn't get a DNF, but unfortunately had troubles.
Daijiro.
Yep. Daijiro, he was doing the Tesla Model 3 from turn 14. We were really excited to see how that car did.
Yes.
But unfortunately, so we were talking to the guy in charge of the car, Mike Kojima, which also, Mike, thanks for signing my hat. And thanks for just being a really awesome dude.
He was a great guy. He talked to us for almost half an hour.
It wasn't quite that long, but it was a while. Way longer than I was expecting.
Yeah.
I was expecting to be like, hey, how's it going? Here's my hat. Oh, thanks, man. we were chatting about all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
I guess his theory at the time, this wasn't verified by any means, but they were trying to conserve all battery power possible, and they unplugged the headlights, and they think that may have thrown it into limp home mode.
Yep, and he had his hazards on when he drove by, and if that was limp mode, that was the fastest I've ever seen a car move in limp mode.
Well, I don't know, because when Dai went by, we were kind of like, that wasn't all that quick.
It was, but it wasn't like he was putting either. You know? If the car was in limp mode, it was moving quick for a car that was broken.
Yeah, it's like factory Volkswagen GTI in limp mode.
Yeah. But it really was disappointing. Because as we've said a few times, electric cars are going to be the future of especially a race like this, because you're not working with how systems are stressed, you know, at this altitude variance.
Right.
And Dai is an incredible driver. So I really wanted to see, him do well on this. And I also wanted turn 14 to get a good time, because I want to see them come back.
Yeah.
And I it's like you were saying, it can be bad if you have a few bad years, then your sponsor might pull.
Right.
And I think turn 14 could build a great hill climb car.
I think so. I think if they're smart, they'll use this car, like Mike Kojima was saying, to go out to tracks and beat records at other tracks.
Yeah.
Show turn 14, like, hey, we've worked out the kinks, you know, where this car is capable. And I think they'll be back next year for the 100th running.
I hope so. And it was actually really cool of him to talk to us about Dai's Type R86.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what was he saying? He's like, oh, yeah, we haven't had time to work on that pretty much.
He's like, well, we've got this. We've got Formula D. You know, we've got so much going on. Nobody's had time to work on it. And I think it was ignition timing. That's the issue right now. They're trying to work through.
Yeah, it was something. Well, it was something to do with the direct injection stuff, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it was them trying to find a computer system that would work for it.
Yeah, there was something like, because there are computers out there that do direct injection. There was just something weird about this engine that requires some special, you know, tuning stuff. So,
which I'm really glad they're figuring it out.
Right, exactly.
Because I want to see a turnkey swap for this in the future.
Oh, I'm sure somebody will come up with it. Somebody will do all the mounts. Hello, Mochi. I forgot to lock you out of the room, didn't I?
Looks like Mochi wants to be in the podcast.
Yep, Mochi is now part of the podcast, aren't you? But to the point of, you were talking a minute ago about, you know, electric cars being the future. All right, hold on. Mochi, you got to go. Look at it. He clicks things on the computer.
He demands the attention.
He does. All right, so to your point earlier about, like, the electric cars being the future and stuff like that, to prove the point that the Teslas are super fast here, Randy Pobst got a 10th place finish in the exhibition class in his Tesla Model S Plaid. I think it's supposed to say Plaid. I think that's Plaid.
Yeah.
I don't know if I ever knew how to spell Plaid.
Well, how often do you really have to spell Plaid?
And these days and ages, not very much.
Yeah.
Not much Plaid going on anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sorry for the old school GTI fans.
Right. Oh, those were the best seats.
Yeah. Those Plaid seats.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, that's the best part about those GTIs, in my opinion.
And I hope that if we, you know, if we lose the GTI, I hope that Volkswagen will maybe make a Plaid seated Touareg or something.
Yeah, something. They got to keep those seats going. Yeah,
some homage.
Yeah, kind of to your point earlier about the difference in these, like, the cars that were there. It's like Randy Pope's got a 10th in that Tesla Model S, and then Tommy was two places behind him in a 67 Camaro.
And then an E30 M3 running that got 9th just ahead of Randy Pope.
Yeah, Tim Hardy to 15th in his 87 BMW E30. That was a car you were just geeking out about.
Oh, I'm a huge BMW fan, despite all their glaring flaws.
Right.
And they had Frankenstein this car. It was really neat. I didn't know about all the compatibility here. I've spoken to a couple of E36 drifters since then, and apparently their cars are just, you can Frankenstein a BMW together.
Huh. Yeah, I didn't think that was really possible with those cars.
He took the M52 bottom end, which was, you know, that's basically BMW's workhorse engine.
Yep.
And then put the S50 head from the E36, the first generation E36 M3 before they did the refresh. And it was making 600 horsepower.
Yeah, with the help of a turbocharger, of course. But
yeah, it was boosted for sure. But it was impressive. And
yeah, and this was just a garage team too. This was our team for, you know, Religion of Speed, of grassroots going to the big dogs kind of thing. Yeah,
and he actually beat most of the Porsches and Acuras.
No, I mean, he was got 15th overall out of 54 competitors, you know, and that is above all the Porsche Trophy people. That is above a lot of really fast cars. The 83 A1 Quattro, which is the hero car of Group B Rally, you know, that was way down in 27th.
I'm just really happy that car was there.
Yeah. Oh, it was, don't get me wrong, it wasn't the fastest car out there, but one of the prettiest for sure.
Yeah, and just it had a lot of character. I mean, there was a lot of character in this race. That diesel bug.
Yeah.
With the center mounted seat.
That thing was crazy. Yeah, it was original Beetle or Super Beetle, who knows which one, with a Volkswagen TDI swap in it. And crazy aero. Yeah, center mounted seat.
And he might have had one of the best launches we watched all day.
Yeah, he did really good. I don't know where that is on this list, unfortunately. There it is. Volkswagen Bug.
In a cloud of black smoke.
Right. So that was Gregory Blanchon? 32nd. So pretty mid-pack.
But yeah.
In that car, I who knows what the suspension was on that thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can only imagine what it's like to drive one of those up Pikes Peak.
Right.
The few times I've driven an original Beetle, the best way I can think of to describe it is unsafe at any speed.
All right, Al Gore. No, not Al Gore. Who was that unsafe at any speed guy?
Who said that? I didn't realize I was quoting anyone.
Oh, yeah. That was about the Corvair.
Oh, well, that might have been accurate, too.
Yeah. No, shit. What was that politician's name? Ralph Nader.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Ralph Nader. He was the one that wrote the book Unsafe at Any Speed, and I'm pretty sure he was talking about the Corvair at the time.
Oh, that's hilarious. I had no idea. I've got to read that book now.
Yeah. Yeah, I never actually read that book, but it was pretty much just like propaganda against the Corvair, because they had a really shitty suspension design, and they were just known to kind of like snap over steer, then flip.
Oh, wow.
what you want in a car.
Yeah, yeah, that's what you want. End up on your lid.
Yeah, I thought that's what you were referencing was that book.
That's hilarious.
Because also, I think the Beetle also had a, what would they call that? The swing axle rear end.
Oh, so that it would just kick out sideways, and it was rear-engined.
Right.
So it already had a reason to oversteer.
Right. I've seen some people in original Beetles that aren't really that modified wheel the shit out of them.
Really?
At autocross.
Okay. That's cool.
Yeah. Like leaning like crazy, picking up a front wheel. This is the weirdest suspension shit you've ever seen. But they can be really fast.
Didn't the original Beetle have torsion bar suspension? That's the difference between the Beetle and the Super Beetle, right? Is torsion bar versus struts?
I have no idea.
Okay.
You know what? I don't have enough knowledge to even correct you on any of this stuff. I know the suspension designs in them are really weird.
Okay.
But that's also the way the pan is made and the suspension is designed is the reason that those were always used for kit cars too.
Okay.
Because it's really self-contained.
Because they make buggies out of them and all sorts of stuff.
They make Lamborghinis out of them. There's some really bad kit cars. I want to do, there's a series I want to start doing on YouTube about cars that are, I want to call it underdriven or, oh God, I forgot the name of my own series that I came up with. Underappreciated and underdriven.
Okay, that's a good one.
It's just about all these weird cars that existed and everybody just forgot about.
Yeah, and there's a lot of them.
There's way more than you think.
Yeah.
But I kind of wanted to do a thing about Volkswagen kit cars and stuff because it was a huge thing.
Yeah.
And everybody seems to have forgotten that was a thing.
Yeah, people made beach buggies out of them. Out the EV West, there's still a bunch of EV West electric conversion kits for them.
Yep.
Because you can make the chassis into anything.
Right, exactly. But there were like one-off supercar body designs and stuff for them.
Wow.
Yeah, well, I'll show you some at some other point. I guess we probably got to move on from Pikes Peak for right now. We got a lot of news to talk about. But I will say, if you have not been to Pikes Peak and you are a race fan, that should be on your bucket list.
I'm really excited to go again.
Yeah.
And now one day I want to build a car and try to do it.
Yeah.
And even if we end up on the DNF, I just want
to
try.
Right. Just to get out there. I mean, if, you know, these guys, the Tim Hardy's team, I can't remember this team name, but, you know, they've proven that it is still a race that you can build a car in your garage and go to.
Yeah. Which is awesome. I mean, because when we talked to his engineer, he said, we're just trying to get to the top.
Right.
And he's near the top of the leaderboard.
I mean, yeah, they were jokingly calling that car the Craigslist car.
Right.
You know?
And look what he did with it.
Yeah. It's quite frankly amazing. I'm not saying we could do that.
Well, yeah.
But we can at least go out there and try.
But it gives you hope.
Right.
Yeah.
So next year will be the 100th running of the Pikes Peak Hill Climb, which I'm super excited to see what they're going to do, because there is a rumor that some people are going to bring back old Pikes Peak cars.
Like historic Pikes Peak cars?
So I'm hoping Monster Tajima and the Escudo,
yeah,
please bring that back somehow. I'm hoping Reese Millen in one of his dad's cars,
Celica
or the Tacoma.
Yeah.
You know, I'm hoping for one of the early electric cars that we talked about in our podcast that never aired, but there's been a huge history of electric cars at Pikes Peak that, you know, I didn't even know about, but
Because they ran really abysmal times back in the day.
Right.
But people were trying to pioneer the technology, and now an electric car holds the record.
Right. So there's a lot of cars. There's a lot more out there than the ones I just mentioned that are historic to this race. Hell, I don't think we could do it for safety reasons, but if we can get one of like the old school cars,
like the original Pikes Peak running cars,
yeah,
they'd have to put some modern tires on it.
Yeah, probably. Or, I mean, that might have to be the last car up the course too, just because it would take them 30 minutes to do it.
That's right. Yeah. And we were down at the start line, mm-hmm. which, you know, it was cool. We'd see everybody launch, but then every once in a while, you'd hear the siren and then the fire truck would take off and you're like, oh no, what happened?
Yeah.
And luckily, you know, there weren't any really, you know, deadly or bad wrecks this year.
No, nothing. It didn't seem like anything too bad, at least when we were there. I was really sad to see the Innovate hypercar crash out. That was that crazy prototype looking car.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That was Cody Love from Michigan.
Yeah. That was the one that was putting out sparks on the start line.
Yeah. But luckily that one didn't look too banged up, honestly.
So, yeah.
But I was really hoping to see him crush the exhibition class, or unlimited class, sorry. Oh, speaking of the unlimited class, I guess before we move on, I should talk about the car that actually won the whole thing in unlimited class was that kind of like prototype looking car with the K20 engine in it.
That's the one that won.
That's the one that won.
Gotta love reps for the Honda motor.
Right?
Yeah.
A little 4-cylinder Honda, turbocharged Honda engine won that thing. That's amazing. I mean, this car was like, you know, one-off race car for sure.
Yeah.
In fact, it had a Skunk 2 intake on it. Okay? A car with a Skunk 2 intake on it won Pikes Peak.
That's really impressive. I mean, and I wonder what this is going to do to the price of K motors.
Right. I mean, they're already on the rise, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Luckily, you can still go to Pick and Pulls and find them.
Oh, just pull them out of the RDXs and whatnot.
Yep.
Yeah.
Out of the CRVs and shit like that.
Yeah.
But getting the like K20, whichever the good K20s are.
The one from the JDM Integra and the RSX Type S.
Yeah. Yeah. Getting those ones is getting quite difficult.
K20A2.
Okay.
And then K20A, I think, was the JDM one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because everybody's swapping them into everything now.
Yeah.
Like, Miatas have them now. What happened?
They're great motors.
But, oh, man, yeah, I can't wait for next year. It was a good time on top of just, like, going to the race. You know, there was the shenanigans the night before.
Yep.
Which you'll see a little bit of that on the Religion of Speed YouTube channel, so be sure to subscribe to that. I got a lot of work to do ahead of me for that video, unfortunately, so give me a couple weeks.
A lot of footage.
But that should be a really fun video. Kind of giving you the fan experience of what it's like to be there. You know, there's lots of things you can go read or watch that's the nice, well put together, high production value of like, this is the race. It's like, no, I wanted to show you what it's like to go there and be there and be a fan.
Stay at a cheap hotel in Manitou Springs. Yep. Enjoy the local bars and head up the next day.
Exactly. Stay up way too late, get way too drunk, and then get up way too early.
That self-serve bar, though, I love that idea.
That was so cool.
Yeah.
Dude, I was on Instagram like earlier this week, and there's this guy I follow that he's OMG Miata on Instagram.
Okay.
Has one of the coolest wide-body Miatas out there. But I was just like going through his story, and he was at that bar.
Really?
Yeah. I've never seen him. I've only seen his car, so I wouldn't even be able to point him out, you know? But it was just funny. He posted like, oh, man, this bar is awesome. I was like, oh, shit, I was there. That's where we were.
And that was great. That guy really loved beer. He knew he was incredibly knowledgeable and passionate about the concept.
Right.
And, I mean, who doesn't love a bar? It was like Dave and Buster's. You just slide your card and then pour yourself beer.
Right. Oh, it's so great because, like, I could just try a little bit of beer, and if I like that one, I'll get a little more.
Yeah.
I don't have to, like, commit to anything or be like, oh, what's this beer? Oh, well, tell me about this one. No, I'll just try it myself and see if I like it.
Yep. Yeah, you could just take a sip. Self-serve
beer.
Yeah.
It's like self-serve ice cream, but I think that's what he called it, like the self-serve frozen yogurt. But
Froyo for adults.
Yeah. And it was just a cool atmosphere they had set up there, too.
It really was, and I mean,
with an eclectic mix of furniture, but it worked.
Yeah. He had that old ski lift as a bench.
Yeah. Yeah, it was kind of ski-themed. I brought this up because, going back to Pike's Peak again, even though I said we were moving on, just because I heard that the unlimited division of Pike's Peak, the rule book, was hilarious. This is it. It's barely a paragraph. I will now read to you the entire unlimited division rules. The director of competition will determine the eligibility of a vehicle for the unlimited division. That's pretty much it. There's two more sentences in here, but they have nothing to do with anything, honestly.
Yeah, that's amazing. Just one person is like, does this work? Does it go?
Right.
Is it leak oil?
Is it safe?
You're good.
All right, let's do it.
Drive it up the mountain.
It's like, fuck, I love that.
And you saw so much, like those carts with the crazy wings on them and twin turbo LSs in the middle.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, oh, you just welded some rails together and there's an LS.
Yeah.
And there you go.
Like, I kind of pine for the old days of the early days of racing where some dude could build an entire race car in his garage and go racing with it. I'm like, oh, those days are past us. But they're really not.
No, they're still alive at Pike's Peak.
Yeah. And that's one of the few places they are, but it's still there.
Yeah, if you can imagine it and you can get it up the mountain.
Right.
They'll let you try.
I love Pike's Peak.
Yeah, I really like it. I mean, in the most beautiful pits I've ever been in.
Oh, yeah.
You know, most racetracks are, you know, not in pretty areas because they had to build a racetrack there.
Right.
But you're in the mountains.
Yeah.
You've just got beautiful, clean air all around you and bears.
And bears. Yep. Trees, bears, race cars. What more could you ask for?
It was a great way to spend a Saturday or a Sunday.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. And next year, we're going to do it even bigger and badder.
I can't wait.
So we're going to move on to some just normal car news. We're going to get away from the race cars for a little bit, or just for a minute, and talk about cars that the people listening to this show can actually drive. The first one I want to talk about is, finally, Subaru is teasing the new WRX. Finally.
Yep. And it's just really funny because when I worked at Subaru in, you know, in 2020, 2019 and 2020, they said the STI was going to come out next year.
Yeah. Well, this is just WRX, too. This is not even STI.
They kept saying it was going to come out, and they kept kicking it down the road.
Mm-hmm.
Kicking it down the road. And the only thing we can tell from this teaser is that there is not a hatchback.
Right. It is still a sedan. Honestly, from this teaser, it looks kind of like the current WRX. It doesn't look like it's that much different. The hood looks like it's a Nopi part from 2005. Like, I'm not a big fan of this hood. I think they need to get back to their big scoop hood.
You don't like how they're integrating it into the body lines now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I get it. That looks cleaner, but I liked the big scoop.
Yeah.
It looked out of place.
Yeah, but it looked like an afterthought.
Yeah. And that's the thing with the original WRX is it was an Impreza that they bolted a bunch of bullshit to and made fast.
Yep.
And I think that's why I liked it. This is like, oh, it's a nice family performance sedan that we developed from the ground up. Like, nope, that's not, for me, that's not what the WRX is.
You put too much thought into it.
You did. You made it too good. It's just the dumbest thing to say. But yeah, we will see what exactly, you know, this comes out with. We're guessing, you know, a new version of the FAA engine.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything different as far as development. I know that some of the FAs were having issues blowing up when people tuned them up, which was, you know, a WRX owner is going to tune up their engine.
Yes, and they're also going to blow up their engines. That is the two things WRX owners do. but look at the spy shot at the back end. Like, that could be literally anything.
Yeah, it's amazing how that camo really does hide body lines.
It really, yeah, no, it does a good job. But even like these taillights could be on a Civic, you know, yeah. And it just,
they could be on a Kia.
They could be on a Kia. So Car and Driver is saying they're expecting 260 horsepower and 277 foot-pounds of torque, which is healthy.
Yeah, that's a good power for a WRX.
Right. I just think, though, they're getting too big, too heavy, and too expensive.
Same thing that's happening to everything.
Yeah. Looking at you, Civic Type R.
Yep.
We were just talking about that before the show, but yeah, I don't know. Also, there's no wing on this at all. Like, look at that spy shot. There is no wing on that car at all.
Is there not even a little duck bill?
It doesn't look like. I mean, it's not the best view for us to be seeing. It's kind of like the front three-quarter view we're looking at.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, where's the aggressiveness?
Yeah, you know? Maybe they're trying to make it more mainstream, maybe.
Yeah, and I think they're going to suffer for it, honestly. Well, yeah. You know what? I say that. They'll probably sell like hotcakes, you know?
The sad part is a lot of them who sell probably have CVTs.
Yeah, that's true. But then again, okay, we're living in an age where people buy SUVs and crossovers.
Yes.
Okay? And then you're going to come up with a bland sedan? The only, honestly, the only people that are going to buy these cars are the people who want extreme, enthusiasts at this point.
Yeah.
That want a fun sedan.
Right.
So why not punch it up a little bit and lean into that a little more?
Take some more risks.
Right.
Yeah.
Look at the Civic. Look at like the SI and the Civic Type R. When they came out, everybody was like, whoa, that's way too overstyled.
Right. But they've done really well.
Look at Hyundai with all their N line. It's doing really well.
Yeah.
You know, I think at this point, if you're going to make something that isn't an SUV or a crossover, it has to be enthusiast minded.
Yeah, you should take risks.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, I'm speaking, you know, from, you know, on our podcast, not from a $1 billion boardroom.
Right.
You know, risking, you know, shareholders' money.
Right.
But I respect, and this goes for beyond cars, I respect any company that's willing to make it a love it or hate it choice.
I mean, look at how that's doing for Tesla.
Yeah.
They're divisive, but that's, I think, part of the appeal.
Right. The controversy. Tesla owners love that some people hate their cars.
Yeah.
And they play it up. You get a defiant fan base.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's kind of a marketing thing. And I think, you know, by going bland, I think it's just leaving a lot on the table there.
Yeah, you're making something that's forgettable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Subaru has not always been known for that. Subaru back in the day was known as the weird, funky brand.
Yeah.
They're the ones who had the Brat.
The Brat. The truck that they bolted seats into the bed.
Backwards.
So that it could be considered a four-door or a four-seater.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they didn't want to go through the truck importation laws.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and even after that, they made the Baja.
Yeah.
They still tried the pickup truck thing.
Yeah, they did.
You know, they
built it on a car chassis.
Yeah.
For the same reason.
Yeah. You know, even when the Outback came out, like, there wasn't really much of that kind of stuff here in America.
Yeah, it had its own class.
Right.
You know, it wasn't an SUV. It wasn't a station wagon.
Right. You know, before that, I think the AMC Eagle was the closest thing you could compare it to.
Wow. I've never heard that comparison, but wow.
It's not a comparison most brains would make, but here I am.
But no, that's, yeah. And it's a quirky thing. It's something right. Where they, you know, it's like, here it is, take it or leave it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I love when a company makes that choice.
Yep. So, But we'll see. You know, I'm sure it's actually going to be a really good-looking car, and I'm sure it's going to sell like hotcakes. So
I'm sure it's going to be quick.
Yeah, and I'm sure in the used market in, you know, 20 years, they'll be $5,000.
There we go.
Cool. I'll own one then. But until then, we're going to be driving older cars.
Yes.
And one of the things with older cars is getting some parts. Now, unfortunately, that's becoming harder and harder.
Yes. As a 240 owner, I understand that. Yeah. It's hard to find stuff sometimes.
Right. Because, yeah, there's aftermarket companies making like big parts, you know, like your brake kits or your pistons or stuff like that.
Right.
But then there's the little trim bits and the knobs for the HVAC and stuff that who knows where you're going to find those.
Yep.
Well, luckily, there are at least two more manufacturers that are jumping on the bandwagon of making reproduction parts, Toyota and Mazda.
And it's really cool to see the stuff Toyota's making for it. I mean, the fourth gen Supra, that's a gimme.
Right.
Like, that's probably the most popular sports car they've ever made.
Yes.
And to this day remains kind of legendary in status. People compare it to the fifth gen Supra.
Right.
And
which is amazing. They're comparing a 90s car to a brand new BMW.
Yep.
You know,
BMW with Toyota badges.
Yeah, but you know, the point is, like, when Nissan comes out with the new Z, nobody's gonna be comparing it to the 300 CX.
No, they're not. Although, you know how many people have I've described the engine, the twin turbo.
Oh, I still think they should call it the 300 ZX.
And several of my customers have said, are they gonna call it the 300 ZX?
I know. If they don't, they're really missing another thing. They're missing the point.
Right.
But
they're, you know, they've got to change the name eventually. They can't keep increasing the size of the engine.
Yeah. If they call it the Z, we'll get back on the parts in a second. If they call it the Z, okay.
Right.
They call it the 300ZX. Yes, you did it. If they call it the 400Z, you fucked up.
Yep. They've forsaken their 50 year old concept.
Yeah.
If they call it the 400Z,
it's always the engine displacement.
Right. It's got to be the engine displacement. Yeah. And it's always gone up.
Yes.
And I understand this is the first Z that's got to go backwards because we're in an era when, you know, there is a replacement for displacement.
Right. Yeah. We have figured out turbos.
Yep.
Turbos work great now.
They work wonderfully.
Yeah. I mean, they're still more complicated than an A engine, but, you know, they just, like my Fiesta, I always go back to that. That does not even feel like a turbocharged engine. It feels like a 2.5 liter engine, but it's a 1.6 and it gets me 35 miles of the gallon.
And you get a little extra torque.
And it's torquey.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we did. We figured out the replacement for displacement.
Yeah.
And it's boost. Well controlled boost.
Well controlled boost. And, you know, we don't need all the vac lines like we had in the 90s.
Right? Yeah. So much cleaner. If anybody's ever worked on these 90s cars, like this Mark IV Supra, the Mark IV was probably one of the better ones as far as like vacuum hoses and stuff.
They're saying the 3000 GT is probably one of the worst examples.
I'd give it a toss up between 3000 GT and 300 ZX.
Okay.
All right. Or 80s single turbo RX-7.
Oh, like the FC.
They actually call it a rat's nest on top of the engine.
Wow.
Most people just delete all of it. Just get rid of all of that.
I don't need any of this.
No, you really don't for it to run. It gets worse emissions because it's a rotary. But yeah, if you own a Mark IV Supra, GR Gazoo Racing. Is that what they? Gazoo Racing. It's such a weird name. But it's the GR Heritage Parts? Yeah, GR Heritage Parts catalog. And they are making a bunch more parts for the Mark IV Supra. Also the Mark III Supra.
Which, when was the last time you saw a Mark III Supra running?
I think I've seen one of like Cars and Coffee or something.
Recently?
It's been a while though, I think, honestly.
The last time I saw one running, there was a group of kids at Formula D in 2019. The three of them had third gen Supras. Two of them had 3S GTE swap them. So they had the four cylinder engine from the MR2. And one of them still had that 7M GTE.
Yeah.
And, you know, for anyone who's looked into these, their head gaskets are notorious for popping.
Yeah.
And for that reason, you almost never see one, especially a turbo, that runs.
Yeah.
And this guy, he had it running. He was really proud. And I'm like, man, when was the last time you saw this running? And he heard me say that. And he's like, man, thank you for acknowledging that. It took a lot of work to get this running. And on my way out of Road Atlanta, I saw him broken down on the highway.
Oh, man.
Yeah. It was really sad. So if we can bring back the third gen Supra with these parts,
right,
that would be amazing. Because I think it was a really good car.
Yeah, I think it's a good looking car.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it has that iconic 80s styling. It looks, you know, halfway between a Porsche 944 and an FCR X7.
Yeah. Actually, the
and roof line,
here's a weird take. The roof line reminds me of a Buick Rietta. I don't know if you know
what you're doing. You know, I never saw that before.
But just looking at this picture, I saw it.
If you only look at the roof line,
yeah,
it does look kind of like that.
But the rest of the car is much better, though. one quick side note. The 3SG GTE swap into one of those. That I mean, so the Japanese version of the IS300, the Atezza.
Yeah.
That came with, that was the 3S GTE.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yep. That came with the Beams engine. That's where the Beams 3S GTE comes in.
Wow.
It has like, it just has a fancy cylinder head on it.
Yeah.
But so that's already rear wheel drive, already in manual.
Yeah.
That would actually be a awesome swap into a Mark III Supra.
And I've heard of people even doing it on the Mark IVs because it gives a great weight distribution.
Yeah, but then somebody's going to, like, key your car or something when they learn that. like right in front of you.
Of your 2J.
Like, they're going to walk by, see the engine under the hood, look at you, key your car as they walk away. Like, no, bro.
Maybe an automatic non-turbo.
Okay, yeah, there you go. But yeah, and on top of the Mark III and Mark IV Supra, also, they're going to be making parts for the 2000 GT.
Which I think we discussed this. Neither of us have ever seen one of these driving.
No, I don't think they made all that many.
I've seen a few in museums, you know, with velvet robes around them.
Right.
And I believe this car was in a James Bond movie.
Yes. You Only Live Twice.
You Only Live Twice.
It says it right in the article here.
Oh, awesome.
I don't actually know that off the top of my head. It's just ironic.
I was really impressed by your James Bond knowledge.
No, I'm not that good. Although I did watch, when I was a kid, for whatever reason, I got on a kick. We had all the Sean Connery James Bond movies, and I just watched all of them twice.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
Every single one has a really cool car in it.
This was also pre-internet. These were on VHS tapes.
That's true.
For kids listening, VHS tapes were like square rectangles that you shoved into a box and magically played a movie.
And you had to rewind at the end.
Yes, you had to manually, like, well, not manually, but you had to hit a rewind button and wait for it to just play the movie backwards,
yep,
sped up, to get back to the front.
If you didn't do that, the next time you popped in the movie, it would just be at the end.
Yeah. And if you rented a movie and didn't rewind it, you got charged money. There's so many things here. Okay, yeah. Kids. You used to be able to go to a store and rent a movie. All right, we're moving on.
Rent a movie in hard copy.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Man.
This wasn't renting it on Amazon Prime.
But I was taking a look at the parts list they had for the 2000 GT, the list of currently available parts, and it's kind of a lot.
Wow.
And it's little stuff, too. It's like little pins and Woodruff keys and like, you know, little screws and stuff and shims. And like, honestly, I think that makes sense because those are the parts, like, where are you going to get those if you find an old 2000 GT that needs restoration?
Because like you said, the big parts have been taken care of by the aftermarket.
Right.
But, you know, how do you get a cover for your ashtray?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. How do you get a final gear kit for the differential, the gear ratio? What gear ratio is 35 to 8. What in the hell is that?
I've never seen that on anything else. I've
never seen a 2.8. That is...
Wow.
Okay, anyways.
Now I kind of want to drive one and see what that feels like.
Right. You know, bolts and ring gear sets and all sorts of shims. Fuses? What? 10 amp and 15 amp fuses. I kind of want to just order those just to have them. Actually, I kind of want to just order some parts for a 2000 GT just to have parts for a 2000 GT.
You think those are glass fuses?
Probably. But also at the same time, weren't those kind of standard?
Yeah, on everything at that point. But you can't find glass fuses anymore. That's the problem. Yeah, when I worked at the parts store, our glass fuse selection, I watched it, you know, go from reasonable to just shrinking to nothing. Because somebody would come in looking for a glass fuse. And the thing is, it's not like your modern plastic fuses where you've got, you know, your standard size, which I think is called ATO, mini,
right,
micro, low profile micro.
Yep.
And they're all the same amperage. It's just the right size to fit in your box. with these glass fuses, they come in different sizes and they're just not labeled. You just have to hold a glass fuse up to a package and hope, well, this one's a little wider. I don't think it's going to fit.
Oh, man, that sucks.
Yeah, and so I had to disappoint a lot of old hot rod guys who came in with these fuses. Luckily, you can buy inline kits to run modern fuses on a lot of these things.
Okay.
Because you know, those plastic fuses, they're a dime a dozen. You can get them easy. But some people are like, no, I want glass fuses. It's like, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I honestly don't know where you can find those anymore.
That just made me think, if you do buy like the dime a dozen fuses, just the, you know, regular blade fuses.
Yeah.
Do try to buy a decent brand. Do not buy Harbor Freight brand fuses.
I didn't even know Harbor Freight had its own brand of fuses.
Yeah. They just can sell you like a kit, you know, with all sorts of blade fuses in it. I was reading an article one time and they tested a bunch of them and the range at which those things, like a 10 amp fuse will blow.
Yeah.
Some of them blow at 5. Some blow at 50.
Oh. Wow. That's going to start a fire.
Yeah, exactly. They're just very inconsistent. So just go buy like the bus brand in the yellow or little fuse. Little is good. Fuse. Yep.
Yeah.
You know, any company that will actually show you the amp current chart for their fuses, you know, that's maybe somebody to trust, not just China putting whatever metal, like, I don't know, melted down Pepsi cans this time. Those work better than the melted down Coke cans, honestly. So, like,
did you test the resistance? No, why would I?
Right?
What I've wanted to try, and it's funny because I get a lot of anecdotal evidence from parts customers over the years. And what I've wanted to see, have you seen these glow fuses?
Yeah, when they pop, they glow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been around for a while, actually, but I've never tried one out.
They're so expensive.
Oh, really?
For the price, you can literally, some fuses, you can literally get 20, and for the same price, you're only getting 2 glow fuses.
Oh, Jesus.
So if you wanted to do your whole fuse box, you know, you're going to spend maybe $100 to replace them with these fuses that glow when they pop.
Right.
And it's a great idea. Like,
but not for that price.
Exactly. It's too much for a fuse. Fuses are supposed to be cheap because they're disposable by nature.
Yeah. And I mean, generally, nobody's going to go through and just replace their entire fuse box with upgraded fuses.
Right.
You know, so you're going to replace it after it blows, which means it's probably going to blow again. So you already knew which one it was. So it kind of eliminates the purpose.
Or if it fixes the problem, it doesn't blow for the rest of the time you own the car.
Right.
And then you pop another fuse and you're like, well, this one's not glowing. So I know it's not this one specific fuse of these 20 that are in the box.
Yeah. It's a cool idea. Just unless it comes factory, it's a bad execution.
Coming factory sounds like a cool thing.
Right. But then that would mean the manufacturer gives a shit about you working on your own car.
Yeah.
And they don't.
And they don't give a shit about their own technicians either half the time.
No. Some of those fuse boxes are like impossible to get to. Like, and you have to like take apart parts of the dash just to get to a fuse box.
Really?
Yeah. There's some like the little kick panel underneath your steering wheel, you know, the knee panel.
Yeah.
There's some you just got to take that off in order to get to it. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
If you pop a fuse, you have to take apart your dash.
Right. But if you're popping fuses, you have other problems anyways. If a fuse is blown, there's a reason for it. Fix the reason for it. Do not put a bigger fuse in there. That is not fixing the problem. Rant aside.
Some tells me you've seen this before.
Yeah. Like, oh, there's a 15 amp fuse in there. That normally takes a 10 amp. Okay, we're just going to swap that out. Yeah. Before it starts this car on fire. One part for the Mark IV Super before we head on or move on to the other manufacturer making replacement parts. They just added oxygen sensors for the Mark IV Supra. Which that just seems like a weird one. Who's asking for OE sensors?
You know, it is and it isn't. Because remember how hard it was to get the O2 sensors right on that BMW?
Yeah, okay. I suppose you're right.
We needed 4 O2 sensors, and I think I ordered 12.
Yeah, before we got them right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because the connectors and shit.
They were different.
Yeah.
Even feeding the VIN into catalogs.
Yeah, it was pulling up the same O2 sensor for every spot.
Yeah, it was. It was saying that the downstream was the upstream, which is definitely not the case.
Yeah.
And we ended up getting some from O'Reilly, and then the guy came back a month later because the O2 sensors sent another code.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the BMW ones were both unobtainium and on back order at the time.
True.
So, luckily, O'Reilly warrantied them out for us, but... that guy might have come back even after you left.
Yeah.
Because those aftermarket sensors didn't work for him.
That is true. I didn't think about that. I guess having OE stuff, you know, that just fits like OE is always a better option than going aftermarket. So,
which in some cases you can put an aftermarket O2 sensor in and there's no problem. Like I've seen a lot of that, but just some cars.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I can't say anything. I don't know why I was going down that road, because like my Subaru has OEM sensors in it because I tried aftermarket ones and it didn't freaking work.
Right. You still get the same check code.
I was getting different check codes.
Oh
yeah. Yeah, it was doing one. It was having one problem. I put in aftermarket sensors. It was having a different problem. And I put in OE and it's fine.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you would think that that would be an easy thing to do.
You would think.
Yeah. Especially considering how often it fails and how many states have emissions requirements, so you have to replace it.
And especially if they're narrow band oxygen sensors. It's an oxygen sensor. It's the same thing. They all operate on the same principle.
Yeah, so why would it be so difficult? But yeah. It really does seem to be the case. I mean, it seems like half the NTK sensors just don't work for some of their applications.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what the difference is, but there's got to be some difference.
Yeah, and NTK is the good brand.
Right, exactly. You know, same with like Bosch, but
yeah,
you know, then Bosch can sometimes have shitty parts too.
Yeah, and Bosch makes the OE sensors for BMW, but for some reason, if you buy a Bosch sensor from somewhere that's not BMW, it doesn't want to work.
Yeah. Parts.
Yep.
People that aren't in like the automotive repair world have no idea how just bad parts are.
Yeah. You have to really cobble some stuff together sometimes.
Right. All right. I say we take a quick break because we're about at the halfway part. And we got a few more things to talk about when we come back, including some replacement parts for your little Roadster, the next evolution of that Roadster, and how you can get out on track with whatever car you're driving.
Sounds fun.
Sweet. We'll be back in a minute. And welcome back, Heretics. So we're going to get this wrapped up by starting off with talking about more reproduction parts, this time for the Mazda Miata.
Which, I mean, if you're going to make reproduction parts for any car.
Right.
That's the one.
The best-selling sports car of all time.
Yeah. And, I mean, you still see them on the road everywhere, all over the country.
Yep. They're still popular. The really funny part is that this car... like is more, I think, more popular now than when it came out.
I could see that. Yeah,
even though it is technically the best-selling sports car of all time.
Yeah, like,
it had this, you know, the hairdresser problem, you know. It was too cute.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like the first generation Mustang.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know. And now kids are like, yeah, fender flares lowered. Big wings.
I passed one of those on 470 today.
Did you?
Yeah.
But if you're not planning on, you know, slamming your Miata and putting big fender flares on it and need some parts that are actually like, you know, exact replicas of the original stuff, well, Mazda UK anyways has you covered. Technically, these parts aren't going to be in US right now.
Yeah, I don't think they're available in the US through Mazda, but that just means there's going to be third-party distributors that pick up the slack there.
Right.
Because, you know, we can still order parts from Japan. You just have to wait longer.
Yeah.
And I have to get a shout out to my...
Wait, you can't overnight parts from Japan?
If we have to. I have to give a shout out to my buddy Jason, who turned me on to this article. He's another 240 BRZ enthusiast, and he sees my Miata and sent me this, and it was really cool of him because, I mean, you're right. It's the most ubiquitous sports car.
Yeah.
You know, until, honestly, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, you could pick up one of these for under $3,000.
I miss those days.
Right?
I think I said it before on our Lost podcast that nobody's ever going to hear, but it's an old saying about when to plant a tree. The best time to plant a tree was 100 years ago. The next best time is now.
Yeah.
Well, the best time to buy an NA Miata was 5 years ago. The second best time is right now.
Right.
Because this status, you know, the fact they're making reproduction parts, they're making reproduction wheels and stuff like that. This is like, all right, Barrett Jackson's going to have some NA Miatas in it before too freaking long. And the prices are going to skyrocket.
Wow. The idea of an NA Miata on the Barrett Jackson auction block.
Right. A stock looking one too. You know, it's going to be this picture, what we got up is the first gen red on the daisies.
Yep.
So that would be a 1.6 liter one.
Yeah.
Because the 1.8s had the seven spokes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yep. If you see daisies on it, well, assuming they weren't swapped on, but if you see daisies, that means it's a 1.6.
Wow. And then the NA8 had its own 7-spoke wheel design.
Yep.
That's cool.
But what's cool is they're making these wheels again. Enke is actually making the daisies again, which I think is cool.
Yeah.
And they're going to be stronger and lighter than the old ones because the casting technology's improved.
And that means that, yeah, we're going to see stock Miata wheels on track days.
Right.
Which is cool. I can't think of the last time I saw a tracked Miata on stock wheels.
I'd like to see somebody just bring out a fully stock Miata and track it. I mean, I guess the SS class at Track Attack, that's kind of what that is. It's meant for like fully stock cars. And there's a couple of Miatas in there.
Just bone stock, but they're like what, NDs or NCs, right?
I think the only two I've seen in there are like NBs.
Okay.
Maybe there's an NA in there. I don't know. Since they split the classes, I don't really see SS class very often, unfortunately.
And drive at a different time of day.
Yeah. But yeah, total of 117 left-hand and 156 right-hand drive parts are being manufactured, which I think is kind of funny.
That is really cool. I mean, I'm happy to see this. You know, it's if they start making aftermarket 240 parts, I'll be really happy.
Right? Because, yeah, Nissan does do some heritage stuff, but it's mostly with the GTR.
Yeah, which is, I mean, I can't argue why, you know, the GTR is the car they should start with.
Right.
But, I mean, Z stuff would be cool, too.
Yeah, I don't know if they really do Z stuff. There's a whole crazy aftermarket for, you know, actual production spec Z stuff, though.
Wow, really?
Yeah, we had a guy come into the shop a couple years ago. Can't remember his name. Giant pain in the ass. Good guy, but man, this guy was just so particular. I mean, he wanted us to change out the nuts on the top mount for the front struts because they weren't the exact gold finish that came with the car.
Wow.
And he found the exact gold finish or like zinc finish ones. Yeah.
That sounds like the kind of thing you should do yourself so you don't have to admit that to somebody.
But it was one of those things. It was so difficult for us to, as just a regular repair shop, to like even estimate the things that he wanted.
Yeah.
You know, it was just, we were not the shop for him. But I'll tell you what, it was a brown first gen 240Z, and this thing was absolutely immaculate. Like, I don't think I've ever seen a Z that, I mean, it looked like it rolled off the showroom floor, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, I was blown away when we saw that that 78 280 that came in.
Right.
And that guy was the original owner, but that car was far from showroom quality.
Yeah, no, that one was like, that one was cool because it was like a survivor, you know?
Yeah, yeah, it lasted in a yard for a long time.
Right. I guess they got that car finished up now.
They did.
Yeah.
I'm just so happy those wheels finally showed up.
I'm so happy my tool actually worked for removing the pins on those rear control arms. Anybody that knows 240Zs, the rear lower control arm mounts to the rear strut assembly, which is also your knuckle or like your upright hub. And there's a giant pin that goes through the entire thing. It's about a foot and a half long. It goes through two bushings and then through the metal part of the hub assembly there.
Right.
And that always just corrodes like crazy. And to get those apart, you have to pull the entire pin out. And it is a pain in the ass. And me and my dad designed a tool to pull that pin out.
Yeah, I remember you showing me that. And I mean, that is cool. And is it still at the shop?
I got it now. I got it back. But yeah, apparently it worked.
Good.
We had to make a little bit of a design change because that's one reason that car was still there is I had to kind of re-engineer that a little bit from the first idea.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it worked. It pulled the pins out and he got it all swapped out. So.
Well, you should pitch that idea to the Z-Source.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a couple people out there that make tools, but this one is cool because it only requires one custom part and the rest is all Home Depot hardware.
Awesome.
So it's a lot cheaper,
yeah,
and easier to do. I'm thinking about marketing that at some point. So
yeah, you absolutely should. I mean, the Heritage Z community is big,
right?
Real. In fact, the Z Car Club of America is meeting in Colorado this year in August.
Yeah, ZCon, right?
And Nissan is debuting something, and they haven't said what it is.
Really? I did not know that.
Yeah. Well, Nissan's going to be there, and they just haven't said what they're going to bring. And everybody's saying maybe, possibly,
the new Z.
The new Z, yeah.
So I think I'm actually talking about we're talking about two different things, because I think what you're talking about is, yeah, the Z-Car Association.
Yeah, the Z-Car is the national Z-Car club. Yeah,
okay. Because there's also an event going on here called Z-Con.
Oh, okay.
That's all Nissan Z related, but that's like a drifting thing, and I think they're doing some road course stuff or some autocross stuff and a car show. It's kind of more geared towards newer Zs.
Okay.
But, yeah. So that's cool. We have two Nissan Z events here in Colorado.
This year.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
That is exciting. Yeah, because the Z-Car Club of America doesn't, you know, they changed their meeting spot.
Yeah.
And this year, I think it's in Colorado Springs. I think it's at PPIR.
Jesus. PPIR is fucking killing it with the events lately.
Yeah. I'm sad I didn't get down to Slush.
But. Yeah. Well, you'll have to come out for Grid Life.
Yeah. I have to.
Yeah. Yeah, at least come out for just hang out, see the concert, see the vendor area and whatnot.
I'd love to get a chance to meet the Gears and Gasoline guys.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to be competing against them, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they run Club TR with the Civic, and that's what class I'm in. So, we'll see how I do.
Yeah. Good luck.
I don't think I'm going to win. That car is way too fast. There's no way I'm going to win, actually. I'm hoping for a third place finish.
Okay.
I'm hoping just for a podium. Judging by the other cars I've seen enter Club TR, I think I have a chance.
Okay.
But it's gonna be hard because my car is mostly stock.
But that just makes it more impressive when you make it to the podium.
Right. But I need more tire. I need more brake. I need more power. I need more everything. that'll be in the future there. To go back to the Miata for a second. So the Miata has been the best-selling sports car of all time.
Yeah.
It's spanned four generations now, and Mazda has confirmed it is getting a fifth generation, but it's going to be a little different because it is going to be part of Mazda's electrification plan.
Wow. So, you know, I have mixed feelings.
Right? So do I.
Yeah. I mean, yes, it is the future. I'm happy for that. But the Miata was never the top tier competitor. It was never, you didn't buy it because you wanted to go fast.
True.
You bought it because you wanted to have fun. And part of the fun for me is that exhaust note.
Yeah.
You know, the visceral sensation of driving an electric one or of driving a gasoline powered one. That being said, a car that small is a great option for an electric platform.
Right. I mean, I've been saying years ago now, I mean, you can go find an old article I wrote for Circuit 94, you know, and I asked, where are the electric sports cars?
Yeah.
You know, and if I'm going to trust anybody to make an electric sports car, it's going to be Mazda.
Yeah, I mean, and it's going to be the Miata.
Right.
You know,
because the fact that when the ND came out, they said, we made it smaller, we made it lighter. I was like, holy shit.
Yeah, nobody's doing that.
Nobody does that. We were just talking about that earlier with the Civic.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, they did it. They committed to their idea.
Yeah, and the chassis is so great that other companies built cars on that platform.
Right, yeah. Fiat was like, hey, can we have that?
Yeah. Yeah, there was the Alpha 124 Spider.
Yep.
Yeah.
What we don't know about electrification yet is if it's going to be full electric or hybrid, because Mazda, they want to move to all their cars having some electrification in the next, like, 5 years or something like that.
Yeah, which seems to be on par with what a lot of manufacturers are shooting for.
Yeah, it seems to be the general consensus at this point. So I would guess, knowing Mazda, I don't know if they're in a position right now to do full electric.
Yeah.
I think they're still working on their technology and stuff. But I could see this being a hybrid. And that got me thinking. There is the Mazda MX-5 or MX-3.
No. The old front-wheel drive teardrop.
No. The new one. The new hatch. The new crossover.
Oh, the CX-3.
It's a CX-3, but I thought they called it the MX.
Did they call it the MX?
MX-30?
Oh, okay.
MX-30. Yeah. So the Mazda MX-30 is the first all-electric Mazda. It's a crossover. But the thing is about this that made actual people excited.
Yeah.
In Japan, they offer a rotary range extender.
I remember us talking about this because it seemed like such a novel, but just, I don't want to say bad idea.
But just not Yeah, it doesn't really make much sense if you think about it too long.
Like, the rotary engines, you know, okay, it's small, but they've never been known for efficiency.
Right.
You know, they put out a lot of power for their size, but, I mean, emissions is what killed them.
Right, exactly. And if you're going to be touting your electric greenification, strapping in a dirty two-stroke rotary in there isn't exactly... they're not technically two strokes, but you get my point.
Yeah.
But that just got me thinking. I'm like, okay, so will we see a rotary engine in a Miata for the first time?
From the factory.
From the factory.
That would be really cool to see, even if it isn't a hybrid.
Right.
Also, I think you brought this point up. That means there's new rotaries to pull out and put in other things.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, that's swappable stuff at that point.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like I said, however they end up doing it, I trust Mazda to keep the car light, lively, you know, in this article, which is from Motor One. So take it with a grain of salt. You know, these guys aren't, these were the ones to break the news, and they're not always known for being the most
accurate. Okay.
But this quote that they apparently got from Mazda says, Mazda is seeking to electrify the MX-5 Miata in an effort to have all models feature a form of electrification by 2030. We will work hard to make it a lightweight, affordable, open two-seater sports car in order to meet the needs of our customers.
And that, I mean, it's cool that no matter what technology, they're staying true to what the Miata is.
Yes.
Which is really important, because I think that, you know, the Miata is really the backbone of kind of automotive enthusiasm.
Yeah, it kind of is.
You know, there's...
You know, if you're, like, getting into sports cars or you're younger getting into sports cars, like, I mean, Miata is always the answer is a saying for a reason.
Exactly. It really is. Miata is always the answer.
Which also spells out Miata.
Wow. I never noticed that.
Yeah.
It's an acronym for itself.
Yes. I only learned that like a couple years ago, and I was like, no shit. Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Did they do that on purpose?
I'm pretty sure, but yeah.
I hope that, because, you know, I'm someone who wants to have my cake and eat it too,
mm-hmm.
that it's a trim level and an option.
Okay.
And that, you know, you can buy your gasoline-powered Miata if you want to. Because it's not like these things have ever been fuel-sucking machines.
No.
You
know? Right? They're already pretty dang fuel-efficient.
Right. They're small. They're light. Even a fully gasoline-powered one in a world of electric cars is pretty inoffensive.
Yeah.
But it's cool to see an electric one. And to be honest, it'll probably be the fastest Miata ever made.
Right?
From production.
Yeah, even if they put in a shitty electric motor and it'll be like, wow, this thing's torquey now.
Yeah, the first stock Miata to win drag races.
Right. Now, here's a question, though. I just thought about this. Will this mean the death of the manual transmission in the Miata, though?
They can't do it with an electric car unless they want to make it a simulation.
Yeah, let's not do that.
Yeah.
I mean, we can do it with a hybrid. Honda does their, like, the CRZ, the manual hybrid.
Absolutely. They mounted the electric motor where the flywheel should go.
Yep. Yeah, that was more of an electric assist than, like, a true hybrid.
Yeah.
But that is what allowed it to have a manual transmission, so...
And when that car came out, I was very excited. I was like, oh, this will be the champion of a whole new generation of electric hybrid cars.
And now everybody's like, the CR what?
Yeah. You mean the CRX, right?
Yeah, I love the CRX.
It's like, no, the Z, the CRZ. It's like, you're crazy, old man.
They never made that. Yeah, that's a shame, because those are good-looking cars, too.
They were, and it looked like... A great Predator. I mean, it looked like a new CRX.
Right.
Like, it had that same kind of quirky, angular hatchback styling.
Right. It just, they were just really slow.
And they didn't get good gas mileage.
No. That's a bad combination.
Right? 0-60 in 9 seconds and 22 miles per gallon. Not really impressing anybody.
No, you can get a lot of cars with better options than that.
Yeah, that are fully gasoline powered.
Right. Just a Civic Si, for that matter.
Yeah.
You know,
it'll get 30 miles per gallon,
right?
And it'll do 0-60 in sub 7 seconds.
But I don't know, the fact that every manufacturer is going to electric, you know, once again, I'm trying not to make this electric car podcast, but I don't think we have a choice at this point.
It's, you know, we can either fight the future or we can go along with it.
Right. You know, we've mentioned it plenty of times on this podcast. There will always be a place in time for gasoline engines, although the EPA is making that even harder and harder every freaking year.
Yep.
That's, we, I have a guest I'm going to line up, and I think we're going to be talking about all that EPA stuff pretty soon here.
Okay.
Because he is very against all that bullshit going on. And so we'll worry about that in a different podcast. But the point is, as far as we can tell for now, gasoline will always have a place, and electric cars will be taking over the duties for daily stuff. But,
yeah,
you know, we still got at least 10 years before that's...
They'll always have a place in my heart and my garage.
Yep, exactly. You know, even if we're like the weird people collecting pre-war cars and keeping them on the road and stuff like that.
It's like, that's okay.
Yep. Taking them out 3 times a year to go racing, I'll still be doing it.
Yep.
But it is nice to see more sports cars, like more electric sports car ideas at least coming out.
Yeah.
Because that was what was worrying me. I'm like, okay, we can go electric, but we can still keep it fun, right, guys?
Yeah.
And there's another company that's trying to keep the fun up, but... Well, this is going to be like the most whiplash price point thing that we've ever done. Going from, what, a Miata, which is, yeah, what, a $30,000 car on average, yeah, to $1 million car.
With only, what, 60, you said, being produced?
Yeah, I think 30 of them.
30, wow.
But I just had to mention this. If you haven't seen E-Legend's EL1, which is a terrible name, but just Google E-Legend EL1. And you'll see what I'm talking about. It is basically an Audi Quattro, but like the future version.
It does look like a new age Quattro, and it's striking.
It is. This is by far the most gorgeous electric car I've seen yet.
Yeah, it's a really neat design, because it still looks like, you can tell it's electric when you look at it, like you can with a lot of electric cars.
Yeah.
But you can tell that it was inspired by a gasoline powered car.
Right. Yeah, because if you look at the front end, like, it doesn't actually really have hardly any grill.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, electric cars still need some airflow because they have inverters that make heat and stuff like that. But, you know, like the Teslas, they got a completely flat front end. And that's what people were kind of saying, is like, oh, we're going to get rid of the grill. And I'm kind of like, I don't know. Cars still need a grill.
Yeah, they need to breathe.
Right. Well, and they just, I think they need it from an aesthetic standpoint, you know. And maybe that's just me being old school, you know, and the cars have always had grills. You need grills. Right. Like, I don't know.
It's like a face without a nose.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. That's
a very good way of putting it.
Even the Ford Lightning has a faux grill.
Yeah. And that's kind of what it looks like is going on with this one. You know, it's shaped to look like the old Quattro rally car. But if you look at it, it doesn't really have any ducts hardly. It shows off like it's a design feature, you know.
Yeah.
So it still looks gorgeous.
I do love that front bumper.
Yeah. I love this color, too. It's like this seafoam green on white with white wheels.
Which, speaking of things that are love it or hate it, seafoam green.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or white wheels, for that matter.
That's true.
Yeah. So that's kind of a bold choice in each direction there.
Yep. Let's show all the brake dust there is.
Right. Yeah. That's the only problem. But I do like my white wheels.
I used to have white Motegi MR7s, and they were off and off white.
Yeah. Yep. Because as many times I'm like, no, I'll just have white wheels. I'll just wash them all the time. I don't.
Yep.
I know better.
You've got to really commit to that.
Yeah. Wash the paint right off of them.
Yeah.
So this sentence in this article also piqued my interest. Looking over the spec sheet, E-Legend also says the EL1 will be capable of 150 kilowatt DC fast charging with a range of about 400 miles, good for at least 2 laps on the Nordschleife with record ambitions.
I love that they measured it in that.
Yeah.
They quantified it in how many times can you lap the Nürburgring at full throttle.
Yeah. Also, that's a ridiculous difference, because that's people don't realize that about electric cars. Like, yeah, it has a 400-mile range.
Right.
Or 2 laps around Nordschleife.
Which is about 17 miles. 12.94. Okay. 25 miles. 26.
So, yeah, a little bit higher. I thought it was higher than 13 miles just about. But yeah. So, 26 miles or 400 miles.
That is a big difference.
It is a huge difference.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I just said huge, like Trump, but...
Huge.
Huge. yeah, so that is still one problem with electric cars, and that's why electric race cars just don't really work, because when you push them that hard, they just don't work.
That's why we were so excited to see them run at Pikes Peak, because it's one run.
Right, one and done.
And then they're done.
Yep. sprint racing, like I said before, sprint racing is good for electric cars, but I mean, if you can only do 26 miles, like, you ain't running a NASCAR event on that.
No.
Indianapolis 24.
I'd actually love to see Indianapolis 24. Like, and it's over. I would love to see pit crews swapping battery packs.
Right.
Like, they can change tires.
I'm surprised Formula E hasn't done that yet. They do the car swap.
They swap the whole car.
Yeah. The driver just gets out and gets in a different car and drives away.
And they just plug in the other one?
Yeah, I guess so. But I always thought that was the dumbest thing about Formula E and why a lot of people couldn't get into it. I'm like, if you did, yeah, some sort of quick change battery, I think more people would be into it.
Yeah. And that's the technology that makes electric cars sustainable, at least right. With current battery life.
Yeah.
The problem is manufacturers are incentivized to make these batteries hard to change, expensive to procure, and if you have a quick change battery, it kind of takes them out of the equation.
Right.
You know, I had a customer call me. He asked me if he should buy this 2012 Leaf.
And you told him no.
I didn't want to put words in his mouth, so I explained to him why. You know, it's like, so the battery's going to cost you $8,000. It's a 60-hour job to replace it.
Is it really on that car?
That's the book time. I don't know if it actually takes that much time.
Jesus Christ. So
it has to be done by a Leaf certified tech. I'm not allowed to sell the battery over the counter to a third party shop. So you have to pay dealership book times, and you have to pay dealership markup. And I want to say he was quoted $11,000 for the labor.
Jesus Christ.
So, you know, almost 20 grand. To buy and install this, and you could just go buy another Leaf, which makes that a very expensive iPhone 6.
Exactly. And this gets into like one of my, I'm trying to make this a really mini rant. One of my big problems with electric cars right now is not the electric car themselves.
Yeah.
It's the way we are producing and using electric cars. And we're going to be creating more emissions by creating these throwaway, you know, iPhone basically cars.
Yeah.
That we're going to make e-waste out of.
Right.
Because instead of doing it in a smart way, we did it in a capitalistic way.
Right.
And suddenly any benefit we even have to electric cars is pretty much null and void. We might as well just have kept driving gasoline cars.
It's interesting how capitalism both drives and nerfs innovation.
Right.
You know, the CVT.
Yeah.
Doesn't belong in every production car on the road, but sadly there it is.
Right.
Because it's cheap to make and it gives you good enough fuel economy to meet EPA standards.
Yeah. It's like I said before, I'm kind of a hippie and I want to save this planet. Canada's on fire right now. Pacific Northwest is on absolute fire right now.
Yeah.
There's a place in Canada that was at 121 degrees Fahrenheit. Yeah. That's hotter than I was called New Vegas because I've played too much Fallout. Las Vegas has ever been.
Yeah. You know? And it's on the Pacific coast.
Right.
Seattle is experiencing these crazy high temperatures. And, you know, it's historically been so temperate that only 30% of homes have air conditioning there.
Right.
You know, people are dying.
Yeah. And it's like, so I'm not sitting here like trying to be like, oh, global warming's a hoax or something. It's like, no, we need to do something about this. But if we don't do it smartly, we're not actually helping the problem.
Right. I mean, if electric cars are just, you know, so you personally can feel better about your carbon footprint and they're actually worsening our carbon footprint.
Yeah, but you're just offsetting it to other things.
Yeah. You might as well keep driving your gasoline-powered car with, you know, no EVAP system.
Right. Yeah, I mean, yeah, just buy it, you know, if you, I've said this before, if you want to be extremely environmentally friendly, you buy a 20-year-old Corolla.
Yep. You buy a 20-year-old Corolla and you just keep it running.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that will, in the time you drive that, will produce less emissions than you going out and buying a new Leaf.
Yep. Yeah. And that new Leaf is probably going to last less time.
Right. Exactly.
You know,
because then you'll have to throw it away. And luckily we're getting to the point where we can recycle lithium, but that was a problem too. You know, I just, there's a bigger picture here that I don't think everybody always sees. And then when you try to make a claim like that, electric cars are maybe not all that great currently. People right. are like, well, you just hate the environment. Like, no. Look at things big picture here.
Right.
You know,
we're running out of lithium, even recycling
too.
It.
That too. The strip mining of lithium is just atrocious.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. The drilling of oil is also atrocious. Look at all the oil spills we've done. But it's like, it just... We're trading one problem for another, it seems like, and it doesn't really seem like there's actually a solution here.
Yeah, and with a gasoline-powered car, you can replace every component.
Right.
You can bring it to any shop in America, or you can buy tools and do it yourself. You know, you can put 5 transmissions in your Dodge Caravan and just keep trucking down the road.
Yeah.
But when the lithium battery goes out in your Leaf or your Tesla, you don't have a lot of options.
Right.
And the manufacturers made it that way.
Exactly. Because that it was in their interest to make it that way, to make it so it's more affordable for you to buy a new car than it is to repair your current car. Yeah. Now we're getting into right to repair laws, which is a whole nother thing. But it's just like, honestly, if we wanted to be the most environmentally friendly thing we could, we would literally stop producing cars today and just keep the ones we have going.
Right, because there are enough.
Yeah.
To do that.
And probably work on some carbon capture stuff or something. But
that being said, I don't want to see used car prices go up anymore. Oh, God,
we don't need that at all either.
No.
There's no good solution to this. So let's just go keep doing our race car stuff, hanging out with race car friends and having a good time.
I like it.
That sounds like the best plan, honestly.
All the best we can do is to keep having fun.
And if you want to go do race car stuff with your race car friends, I have a great way for you to go do that.
How's that for a transition?
Oh yeah, I'm getting good at this. All right, I was proud of that one. This is literally, I don't care what kind of car you have. If you want to go to Virginia International Raceway, which does mean you have to go to Virginia, unfortunately.
Yep.
And pay $300, you can do the Tire Rack Ultimate Track Car Challenge. And much like we were talking with earlier with the Pikes Peak Unlimited rules, pretty much the same thing. Here's the rules. Car and driver must pass a NASA safety inspection. That's it.
That's it. They even put period and then write out the word period and then place another period. And
another period. This is very definitive, all right?
Does that count as an ellipses?
It might, yeah. But the goal of this endeavor is to just find the fastest track car in America. And you will be going up against the craziest stuff. But even if you don't think you have the fastest track car in America and you just want to see how you stack up against these cars, sign up. $300 is not that bad for what looks like a ton of racing.
And VIR is a famous track.
Yeah.
So $300 for all day long at that track. You know, it's not the cheapest, but there's also a lot more money you could spend.
Right. And they're going to have pro cars out there too. So if you want to race up against a world challenge car, I don't know where else you're going to get that opportunity.
I'd love the opportunity to just be walked past in my Miata. Just watch that thing just rip by me.
Right. It's
like, how many times has it lapped me now?
This is going to be part of NASA's Hyperfest weekend, which I'm going to talk about more next weekend. But to give you a sneak peek of that, if you know what grid life is, NASA is getting in on that. And by NASA, I mean the National Sports Car Place, not the space people.
Not the space people.
Yes. Although that would be really cool if the space people were like car event. We'll be like, yeah.
They stopped doing manned missions. They might as well do this.
Right? So, yeah, like go out and build the craziest car you can and go see what it does against pro cars. I think that's a great idea, personally.
It sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah. And we'll talk, like I said, more next podcast about Hyperfest, because there's a lot more. So if you don't want to do that event, there's a lot more shit to do there.
Awesome.
So, bro, somehow we're both in the car enthusiast apocalypse, while at the same time, the best time to be a car enthusiast.
Everybody's putting up a one last great hoorah.
Yeah. Hey, and if that's what it is, that's great. But hopefully we can keep this going on longer than that.
Oh, I mean, like I said, gasoline-powered cars are always going to have a place in my life.
Right.
Even if they make no fiscal or right. practical sense.
It's going to be buying a mechanical watch.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't really make sense, but we're going to keep doing it anyways.
Yeah, I'd love to have somebody show up in their electric car, and I open my garage, and there's 20 gasoline-powered cars.
Right.
And you know what? I can't drive 20 cars at a time, so there's actually an environmental argument for me to own 20 gasoline-powered cars.
Exactly.
Yeah.
See, EPA, we're the good guys.
Right?
Stop, yeah. Stop punishing us.
Collectors are your friends, yes. EPA.
We're getting those gasoline cars off the road.
Right.
And into our garages.
Into our garages, and we'll drive them, but again, only one at a time.
Oh, man. All right. I think that is going to do it for us today. We covered a lot of stuff. But
this was a really productive podcast.
I think we need to do after work podcasts more often.
It's not a bad idea.
Like, I feel like our energy was a lot higher.
Yeah.
Than like on the weekend when we're trying to chill and relax.
Yeah.
We're like, oh, fine. We'll do a podcast.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you know, it's hard just to wake up.
Right. Exactly. But, yeah, if you liked this podcast and want to let us know that you liked it, you can reach out to us at contact@religionofspeed.com. If you didn't like this podcast and want to let us know it, you can reach out to us at contact@religionofspeed.com, whichever one you want to do. And as always, I want to thank the band Wheels for the use of our theme song. It's Colors off the album Traveler, Part 1. Think that's what I got that right.
And we can hear them at wheelstheband@bandcamp.com.
You got that part right, for sure. All right. Yeah, that's going to do it for us today, guys. And until next time, peace out.